You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the equine network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, September 10th, episode 3772. Good morning, horse people.
Ah, Wednesday, the day we cover Glenn's favorite topic. Horse health. And Jamie makes you feel better about yourself with the latest weird news from around the world. Happy Wednesday.
I feel like we're doing a lot of horse health today, actually, Jamie. We're going to cover two topics that we haven't talked about in a long time. Where Dr. G is going to join us, and she's going to talk about how to deal safely with a cast horse in a stall. We did this, I looked it up, 13 years ago is the last time we talked about a horse getting cast in the stall and what you're supposed to do. And if you remember right, it might even been Dr. G that was on. If you remember right, we got an email about 2 months later that somebody had a cast horse and they remembered the interview and they knew what to do. So if we can help one of you in that situation, then we're happy about that.
It helped me. So I'm excited to get back in touch with her and let everybody know again and remind myself what to do.
So maybe we'll learn something new. Who knows? But Rebecca is also joining us. She is president of Equitape, and we're going to talk to her about the use of kinesiology tape, which is something my wife uses on herself and the horses. And we're going to talk about that. We haven't talked about that in a very long time. And then you have some weird news for us.
Yeah, it's still going on.
Okay. The September Keeneland yearling sale day one was yesterday. You want to hear some numbers?
Oh, I can't wait.
So this is yearlings, right? Okay. Gunrunner Colt, number 177, went for $3.3 million.
Oh, my God.
A yearling. Gunrunner. A Gunrunner stands at Three Chimneys, and apparently the fee is $250,000. So
yeah. Who's the mayor? Does it say?
It didn't say here who the mayor was.
I don't care about the women.
September sale first session produced 15 seven-figure horses. That's over $1 million, 15 of them. It's the highest number for the first session since 2006. They say first session the first day. It goes on for days. So day one, it's the highest number since 2006. So apparently the economy is not affecting the thoroughbred world much. The top-priced filly of the session was number 144, a filly by Not This Time, who sold for $2 million, which is pretty good for a filly. A total of 113 horses sold on day one. Are you ready for $71 million? That's up from last year's day one of $57 million. So that means that the average was a record. Average horse, $633,000.
I mean, I don't understand why we're not there buying horses. I found it. Okay, Hillendale sold the Gunrunner Colt, and she was out of Thoughtfully, which is by Tappet. And she was a grade two winner.
But still, so, grade two winner kid go for $3.3 million?
He must have been super pretty, or there's a lot of testosterone in there where people are competing against each other.
Well, apparently it's so, because with a total of $71 million on day one, I guess, you know, we talked a lot. I do the show for WISA, which is the trade show, and there's a lot of talk right now about how sales are down at tack shops and things like that. Apparently, it doesn't affect the rich people. They're still buying horses.
we had talked about this before, that is just a echelon of money that just isn't affected by things. You know? No. Like, it's God love them. You know what? Thoroughbred breeding has given me some really nice horses.
That's true.
Tappet, so
that's true. Them. All right, let's do some daily winnies. happy birthday to you. We have several auditor birthdays today. Alex Hamilton, speaking of racing, she's in the racing world. Tiana Vestry, Corinna Grader, Tessa Heyman, who was just on our show last week, and Rachel Laux. Happy birthday to all of you. Plus, guess what? Sandy, one of our auditors, wrote this.
Bought a horse for $4
million? Not quite that much, but she did write. So it's your fault, by the way. I got a new pony for my birthday, marching towards death and all of that. So you are responsible for another horse in
And again,
paddock.
This is where we should be playing the marching towards death sounder that I really want you to make. Which
that I
is,
haven't made yet.
I want it to be when Darth Vader walks through there.
Yeah, I'm still in depression over losing my Fiverr guy that made all our sounders. I'm still kind of depressed about
that. Oh, he's not dead, Glenn.
But he's not working for us anymore.
He just quit.
By the way, Sandy's new horse, get this, is a New Forest cross. The sire is New Forest and the mama's a Morgan Halflinger. And it's cute as a dickens, by the way. He sticks at 14.3. 3 years old, coming four in April, well-handled, lightly started under saddle. You're going to have so much fun with that one, Sandy.
I would like to go ahead and create a foal out of every cute baby horse, tiny pony there is. And then that's what she got.
Yeah, Morgan Halflinger and New Forest. There you go. It's a good combination. All right, your turn.
Or disastrous. We'll find out. Oh, Butters! Hey, I have some awesome news. First of all, speaking of Butters, he got his feet trimmed yesterday for the first time. He was such a good boy.
Was he? My fairy. Stood there okay?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, my fairy was like, he goes, he stands here like he's 15 years old. And then when he got done, he was like, well, that couldn't have gone any better. And I was like, yeah. So one of the tricks that I've learned is Butters really likes having his tummy scratched. And he's great for having his hind feet picked up, but he gets a little stressed when you pick up his front feet. And I just scratched his tummy the entire time. My arms
isn't
are cramping and
weird?
Sore.
It's usually the other way around, isn't it?
What do you mean?
They don't like the back and front are okay? Isn't that?
I know. There's no explaining this little Palomino angel baby. But I was, my daily winning goes out to the entire team of veterinarians and my dear sweet Homer, because yesterday they officially said he was in remission.
Really?
Lymphoma. Yeah.
Yay. Good job, Homer.
Now, remission is paused and yes. The chemo worked. So,
yay.
You know,
hey, yeah, when you have cancer, you take remission. It's like,
exactly.
Yeah. Good
exactly
for Homer.
I'll take it. And just a reminder to those, it's not a paid advertisement, but I really think we should get them on, and B, they should buy some commercials, because Trupanion has been, I happened to insure Homer because his legs were so crooked. I'm like, this dog is going to need like ACL surgery or something. And then this happened and they have spent over $15,000.
Really?
I can't. Yeah. I mean, he's been going to chemo for like 9 months. And so I take him up to North Oklahoma City every week. And then it was every 2 weeks. And then it was every three. And now we don't have to go back for a whole month. And then they're just going to check him. So anyway, that insurance has been amazing. When I get my receipt, I snap a picture of it. And by the time I get home, the money's in my account. It's insane.
We don't get the opportunity to say good things about insurance too often. So.
I know. I know. And I think I have a $25. If anybody wants my little like referral code, I'll send it to you, because I think you get $25 off.
So it's Trupanion?
Trupanion. Yeah. I learned about it from the Facebook page We Rate Dogs, which is a whole nother awesome page to go look at. But yeah, so I've been really pleased with all of that. So, I mean, it's cost me a lot of money because I have to pay for certain things and 10% of everything. But I mean,
it's better than like $15,000.
They've spent $15,000 so far. So I'm super appreciative.
I'm surprised actually that there's not like a cap on any particular disease. In other words, kidneys or cancer. They cap it at a certain amount.
I'm knocking on wood. You can shut up. I don't know what the rules are, but I'm just going to keep going.
Well, hopefully you don't have to. Hopefully Homer's good now for a few years. Let's hope. Yeah. Good job, Homer. Well done.
Yay, Homer. Oh, I cried so hard.
I bet you did. So yeah. I'm very happy. That's good news today.
Thank you.
Well, let's head over to one of our favorite people on the planet. I did a lot with her during COVID, actually. Dr. Rebecca Jimenez, she's with the Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue Organization. She's been on our show many times. And I asked her to come on today because we haven't talked about horses getting cast in stalls in a long time and the way to properly handle that without dying. And she's going to help us with that.
Well, I'm pleased to welcome to the show Dr. Rebecca Jimenez, Dr. G, as we call her, from the Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue. Welcome, Dr. G.
Glad to be back.
Thank you so much for joining us. You are the kind of person that I don't want to say we dread getting in touch with you. I mean, we kind of do, because that means things have gone very wrong in our life. Or, as we're doing this time, it is to educate us on what to do when things go wrong. And I hope I didn't offend you, Doc.
It's just one of those things.
Well, so we are going to talk today about horses getting cast in stalls, because it's always one of those things you're like, oh my God, my horse is stuck against the wall. What do I do? So going in with the knowledge armed to handle the situation, instead of what I like to do is going into situations and freaking panicking.
Just panic. Like,
I think this is a much better place to start. Would you agree?
I would. And usually it seems like it's always in the morning. You're by yourself. You go out to the barn to feed or whatever, do morning checks, and you're by yourself. And that is challenging and scary when you're talking about trying to roll 1,000 or 1,200 or, well, I mean, your horse isn't that big, but still, you know, even rolling 800 pounder is challenging.
I have all sizes of horses, so it's fine to know anyway. So horses getting cast in stalls is obviously when they get stuck against the wall and they can't get themselves rolled over or turned over or get their feet underneath them, or they're stuck in paneling or whatever millions of ways horses try to murder themselves is pretty much what we're going to talk about. So I mean, I feel like I should just hit the button and get you going. So beep.
Oh, well, there you go. So you're right. There is, you know, technically the cast thing would be the horse cannot get its feet underneath it for whatever reason. It's up against a wall. It's got its feet through something. Could be fencing, could be stuck in the trees, any of those options. Or it could even be one of, you know, it's a common thing with older horses. They lay down to roll in the pasture and they just somehow get in sort of a low spot. It could be just even a swale in the sand, and maybe they have a little challenges with their hind end. As we get older as humans, we find it harder to get off the ground. That's true for horses too. So for any of those kinds of situations, when you find them, Our first job is to figure out what is really going on. And of course, that, remember, I am a PhD, I'm not a veterinarian. So if this is something that is associated with, in any way, shape, or form, colic signs or anything that's medical related, other than they were just dumb and stuck their feet through something or rolled up against something, you do need to call your vet. Recently, I had a horse, one of my personal horses, and she was laying down in the pasture, and the owner went out there and got her up, and then she went down almost immediately. And her first call was to the vet, and her second call was to me, which is the right thing to do if these kind of things happen.
So they call you, and let's say, just to keep it simple, my horse is stuck against the wall. I have a foal and I have a 33-year-old and everything in between. And it can happen to any of them when they're in the stall. But let's just, because that seems to be probably the most common, is let's walk us through what do we do when we walk in the barn and our horse is laying down with its feet up against the wall and it can't get itself underneath it.
Okay. So first of all, we have to think about our safety too. So to me, the right answer is always go get your riding helmet, go get something to protect your head, because those feet, particularly on those foals, they are flexible and capable of swinging their feet in places that you wouldn't think they normally can. We always want to protect our multi-million dollar brains. They're really important to us. So take those every 10 seconds and go get yourself an equestrian helmet or something to protect your head.
Football and then helmet, we're preferably. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then we're going to assess the animal
with a full face guard and on it. Yeah.
Hey, I think a football helmet would be a great thing to do, or one of those ones that the pitchers use. Absolutely. Protect your face as well as the top of your head. There's plenty of pictures to show why out there on the internet. All you have to do is look it up. Horse kick to the face. It's awful. So don't do it. So the first thing to assess is how easy is it to access this animal? Is this a large stall? Is this a place where we can think about our safety? It is always safer on the backside of the horse, where the wither is on the backside of the horse. That is a safer position. And nothing around a horse is safe. As you guys know, you know, they can roll, they can kick, they can do those kind of things. But we're going to look at the safe position. And the easiest thing to do, especially if there's just one or two of you, is see if you can get a hold of the mane, and we're talking several handfuls of mane here, and pull the horse even a couple of inches on the front end away from the wall. That is what most veterinarians do. That's what most livestock managers do at stalls and in situations around the world. Try to get that front end away from the wall, because sometimes that's all they need is just a couple of inches to be able to straighten out their legs, push against the wall themselves, and then they can stand up. And it can happen so fast, you've got to be ready to be able to exit that stall, because it's pretty scary how fast a horse can actually get up. If you look at videos of horses standing up from even rolling out in the pasture, it's like they're up. So think about that. Pulling away from the wall is the easiest thing to do. One or two people may not be able to do that. If you've got a 1,200-pound horse and you try to grab that mane and pull it, you may not be successful. So your second call may be to a neighbor, a friend, somebody down the street that you know, the big guy that lives down the street that you don't, the sort of creepy, but maybe, hey, he's nice and big and strong. So
summon the adrenaline, or suck it up and call the crazy guy down the street.
Yes. And a lot of people say, oh my God, I'm going to hurt his mane. It's just like the girls at the circus that get hung by their hair. They're not hanging by three strands. They're hanging by their entire weight of their hair.
Okay, right? But they're nuts too, let's be honest.
That's true. And the same thing with the tail. So sometimes you'll see veterinarians move a horse away from the wall on the hind end using the tail. That is something you've got to be real careful with. One or two people manipulating the horse using their tail, using all the hair and grabbing hold of all the hair, so that you're not breaking the bone, you're not tearing the hair out, you're not degloving the skin off the tail, which can be done. But, you know, if the front end doesn't work, it may be easier for you to move the tail. If that doesn't work, our next thing is we've got to start looking at a little bit of equipment. And it doesn't have to be fancy equipment. The challenge is getting something on the downside two legs, the downside front leg and the downside back leg. If there's two people, you should be able to roll even a large horse. And the reason I know that is because I was up at Gentle Giants up in Maryland, Draft Horse Rescue recently, and they have over 200 horses in their rehabilitation program. And there's always something that they bring in from killer sale or something that goes down. And those girls, they're like 112 pounds soaking wet, and two of them can roll a draft horse. So it can be done if you're doing it. And sometimes they're having to do it two or three times a week, depending on the situation with the horse. So I know it can be done. And that involves putting a soft piece of rope or webbing around the joint that's right between the bone that's right between that first joint, the fetlock, on the pastern above the hoof. And if you can fiddle it around, a little loop around that leg on the front end and the back end, and pull together to roll the horse. The problem with this one is horse's legs are so long that if he's up against the wall in a 12-foot by 12-foot stall, by the time you roll a draft horse, his feet are touching the wall on the other side, right? So where are you going to be?
Dr. G, I got to throw my story in here right now. It's because it's perfect. We had an 18-hand Percheron, weighed a ton. This is a big horse. And got cast, completely cast in the stall. And it was a bigger stall, but it's completely cast. And we could not get that horse. It was just Jennifer and I. So we actually had to go to the plumber's shop next door, get the plumbers. Talk about the guy next door, right? We got the plumbers to come over, and there were four of us. But that's the problem we had, is what we knew when we rolled him over, just the way he was situated, that we were going to be in the way, because there's four of us and we needed four of us to get him rolled over. So we actually took the time to come up with a game plan of who went out the door first and what order. when that horse started to roll over, and we had it down, and we managed to do it without anybody getting hurt, but it took planning who was going to exit the door in what order, so none of us got clobbered by those huge pipe plate feet, you know?
Well, now that you've told your story, let's hear the actual real way to do it, Dr. G.
Well, no, actually, you did the right thing, Glenn, because it's funny about horse people. We're always in a hurry, but we don't want to take 30 seconds to come up with a plan. Hey, you know, could we, in that case, I don't know the layout of your stall, but the only other thing you could have done is, could you have run the ropes through the stall bars into another stall?
No, they were solid. And yeah.
There you go. Yeah. If they're solid, then you're limited. But yeah. if there's stall door, either you can shape it out the door, or you could go through the stall wall. That would be another option to give yourself more room. And a lot of people are like, well, what's he going to do when he's got the rope on his feet when he gets up? You're right. He could step on it. He could trip on it. He could, those kind of things. But you've got to, at that point, you know, a horse that's down, most veterinarians will tell you that I've talked to, they said they don't worry about if a horse has been down for an hour cast in the stall, because they sometimes sleep for an hour. But it gets much over an hour and they start getting worried. And just like, I don't know, but I've achieved that age. If I lay on one side for very long, my brain, even in my sleep, says, hey, you need to roll over. And that's what the horse's brain is telling him is, you know, instinctively, I need to get up. I've been down long enough. And for a horse, the challenge of being down so long is their muscle and their body weighs so much, it puts a lot of pressure on their downside lung, which means their downside lung really isn't working. And that means their oxygen tension, their ability to get oxygen to their tissues, is debilitating. And guess what that means? Next time, we're circling the drain, which, you know, the horses are born circling the drain in the first place. Some horses are a little closer to the drain all the time. But that's why veterinarians get very worried about down horses being down for more than an hour.
Now, on a practical side, we just used long lead ropes. That's what Absolutely. We use, soft, long nice lead ropes. Long. Yep.
I love using nice, soft cotton or yep, webbing we lead ropes that are nice and wide. The biggest game to not having any damage to that lower limb, you know, I mean, you guys know, and I know we've had plenty of horses in the morning experts that have come in and talked about lower leg injuries. And everybody goes, oh my God, you know, tension or cutting or compression of those poor soft tissues in that lower leg is potentially damaging. But if you're spreading the weight over a nice cotton rope so that it can't cut or tighten, then you shouldn't be having problems. And usually what horses do is they roll over, they get up and they go, what the heck is this on my foot? And they sort of shake it. And if you've just looped it around, girth hitched it, then it should work loose anyway.
Now, the thing is, though, you're talking about the horse rolling over. It could step on the rope. The horse could have its, you know, little fetlock pinched. Yeah, all of that's better than lungs collapsing. So, like, exactly. Seriously, you have to weigh the toxicity, you know?
Exactly. Now, and some places, it seems like these things happen in some places more often than others. And I'm not really sure why. You know, some people say, you know, put the bedding up against the wall, that limits some of these options, whatever. I've seen horses in barns that they do all those things and they still get cast. So I think it's an individual horse thing.
I think it's a, what is my horse's ability to try to take care of its own body, you know, like,
that's right.
I don't want to go to a 3-day event and take my horse cross country when they have no will to protect themselves. No will to, yep. You know what? I'm just going to go throw it. Like,
exactly.
No. Like, let's try not, like, you have to want to try not to die.
And the other reason, the other thing to think about too is, why were they rolling in the first place? I mean, we already talked about the medical issues, but is there something else? Is their skin itchy? I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I will go out of my way to find a rough wall edge. If my back is itching and there's nobody else to scratch it for me, I go to crazy lengths to try to scratch that back up against the wall and scratch, right? And mm-hmm. we have hands, but there's always that one place in the middle of your back where you can't scratch. And sometimes I think that's what happens to horses. They have an itch or they have a scratch that they need to do. And maybe for some of those horses, particularly the ones that do it regularly, it may be helpful to do more grooming in on the back in the places where they can't reach. There are places where horses cannot reach themselves, even if they're scratching with their back foot or reaching around with their teeth. They just can't get to it. So that's probably what's happening. If they could tell us, they would, but they can't.
Well, I think that the most important thing here too, like one of the, not the most important thing, but one thing that I have learned just from our conversation now is grabbing that mane and everybody, let's just heave this thing against the wall and see if it works. I had a foal that would get cast all the time and I was always trying to roll it. I think that if I would have known, just grab the mane and just pull backwards a couple inches, that probably would have been a much more effective, easier way for, especially for
that is absolutely the easier way. And it's safer too, because anytime you're fiddling around with a rope around legs and you lean over the horse, I have seen horses do some amazing things with those back legs. They don't know that you're there to help them. You know, remember we're talking about this prey animal and all of a sudden this predator is leaning over them. I'm sure to them instinctively in their ancient brain, they're thinking, oh my God, the hyena or the lion is here, mm-hmm. and they may struggle. Some horses, you know, you take a little bit of time, let them know, hey, it's me. Make sure they can hear you and see you. Talk. I'm assuming that people do that without your head, without you doing the, oh my God.
Oh my God, the horse is down.
You know what's funny though? We've had this several times, and I think I want to know if you've had the same situation. What the horse will struggle a little when it gets stuck, but eventually the horse just stops. It just lays there. Yes. And that's and some of that the experience is we had
of those lungs. That goes all back to Dr. Temple Grandin's work. You know, she talks even for herself, using the squeeze effect to try to calm herself. Effectively, they're getting a squeeze effect because their entire body is pushing down on that lower lung and those musculature. And we see that a lot in large animal rescue when we're using slings or we're using some of the other things. You've seen it in tilt tables. We use them in cattle and horses. Mustangs, et cetera, that have to have their feet done that are feral out in some of the BLM properties, they use a tilt table. They just put the horse into the tight spot and compress it with a lot of compression and lay it over on its side. And they magically, it seems magic, it's the same thing as Temple Grandin talks about. It's a pressure thing. And so that works until it doesn't. Mm-hmm. They'll lay there until they don't. And the sad thing for horses is they don't go, hey, I'm getting ready to jump up and bap you in the face or kick you. That's the safety problem.
Well, I do love the fact that the first thing you said was protect your head. And so that's good advice too. Like, you know, horses are going to sense adrenaline. They synchronize adrenaline. So if you go in there nice and calm with the helmet and feeling safe, you know, I like to think my horse is just like, oh, mom's here. Thank God. I'm just going to lay here till mom fixes it. But you know what? Like, I think that a lot of it is the approach that you go in there with. And I think it's really important to keep yourself nice and calm. And any situation with horses, you know, that could be potentially stressful is just stay calm. Assess the situation. What's my, as Glenn says, what's my exit plan? Yep. And how is the easiest way to make this happen? And just stay calm. So go ahead.
What I was going to say is what we usually tell people is we can puke and cry later, but right now we have to have our head together, you know, and all of us do it, right? I mean, you get out of a scary situation, you have a car wreck or whatever. Usually it's the next hour or the next day that you're actually crying because by that time you've processed it, right? But right now we need to work together, try to stay calm. You know, you're right. The horse, they've done some work to show that horses can sense your stress, your heart rate, your pheromones or whatever it is that we exude when we're scared. You know, I know after I'm scared, I stink. You know, I can smell myself and other people do too. So I'm sure the horse can smell it. So good luck. You don't have to go take a shower before you roll your horse over.
Well, Dr. G, where can people go to learn more or ask you questions or join up with you guys?
Generally, what I tell people is if you look up technical large animal emergency rescue, we have a study group on Facebook. There's 25,000 people on it, and it's not a prayer group. It's a study group. And we tell people, go there. We've got a lot of information there for horse owners, but there's a very professional group there of veterinarians and firefighters and law enforcement folks that also look into large animal rescue. And we share lots of details there. You can also get a hold of me at my personal email. It's Delphi Acres, D-E-L-P-H-I-A-C-R-E-S at hotmail.com.
Fantastic. Dr. G, thank you so much. As always, you're amazing to have on and we appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Non-GMO whole food nutrition is the basis of the entire Daily Dose Equine program. We never forget that natural is better and simplicity is key. Daily Dose Equine uses non-GMO whole food ingredients like alfalfa, timothy, peas, sunflower seeds, and flax. Daily Dose Equine doesn't use fillers, bulking agents, or leftovers from other industries, so you can feed less yet improve body condition and energy. And our feeds are free from chemical residues and glyphosate. Find the perfect formulation for your horse at DailyDoseEquine.com. Select Daily Dose Equine formulations are available nationwide through Chewy.com and TractorSupply.com.
Well, coming up next, we're going to be talking about kinesiology tape, which I always have trouble saying. And we haven't talked about that in years. And we have Rebecca Haddock joining us. She's the owner and president of Equitape. Talk about what it is, why it is, and why we use it. Well, Rebecca, thanks for joining us this morning. We appreciate you being here.
Absolutely.
So let's back up a little bit and kind of explain for those that may not know, although I think everybody probably knows. If you watch the U.S. Open especially, you're going to see tape on every one of them, right? So kind of explain what it is and what it does.
Okay. That could be a whole segment within its own many times over. So we're still learning and expanding what kinesiology taping can do. Basically, you're mostly going to see it in rehab case scenarios or on athletes, right? So in rehab case scenarios, we're talking about increasing circulation, both lymphatic and blood, reducing swelling, inflammation. It's incredible at reducing pain. In fact, it's better than no-sits at that. You're going to see it in support of tendons, ligaments, things like that. In the athletic world, you'll see it in support or prevention. Very, very good at preventing injuries from happening. So that's phenomenal. And also athletic ability. Really what it does is it brings a lot of oxygen-rich blood to the area so that you can perform at your top level for longer and your fatigue is reduced quite a bit. So those are its main highlighted areas, I would say, that people are most familiar with. Over the past 7 years, I've done a ton of research into the neurologic issues that horses can have, whether it's from toxic plants or parasites or traumas, and how kinesiology taping can help that. And I've had amazing results. And then I started really digging into fascia work, how well we can be effective in the horse's fascia. That has also produced some phenomenal case studies. And then most recently, really digging into the immune system and the lymphatics and being able to help things like heaves, seasonal allergies, all kinds of different stuff like that. So it's expanding and it's expanding yearly. So it's quite cool.
Okay, can you please tell Jamie and I where to put the tape to help our allergies? We'd be thrilled to hear that because we both have it. So,
yeah, if you were a horse, I could tell you that. Yeah. kinesiology taping is actually a lot more receptive. Horses are more receptive than humans, which is really cool. I know I use it all the time on myself, and I have still yet to find the right lymph node to decompress to help my allergies. But for the horses, it's the one on the shoulder. So if you like look at a lymph basin map, you can Google it, equine lymph basin map. You'll see the one in the shoulder. If you decompress that with kinesiology tape, it's like an antihistamine. It's so phenomenal.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, the Chi University here in Ocala has done many, many episodes for us over the years. And it kind of follows that same thing as far as those points that you're talking about using the tape in those certain points kind of follows with the Chinese medicine side of things.
Yeah, think about this. the form of healthcare, the structure and the way healthcare has developed over the years, and I talk a lot about this in my book that's coming up, is that you move from plants, diet, exercise, essential oils, things like that. And then we moved and as we developed and innovated and came up with the ability to do surgery and to put the mind to sleep so you could do surgery and pharmaceuticals and things like that, we just kind of forgot about that holistic side. So now that we're coming back around and saying, hey, the holistic side was quite helpful and it was very good at what it did, I think that's where a lot of the skepticism comes in. But it's like, for thousands of years, this is what we did, and we did it very successfully. We're just finding better ways to do the holistic side. So yes, those points can be achieved through the use of kinesiology tapes. So you don't have to go through years and get tons of certifications and spend a lot of money to learn where to put the needle, how to put the needle. And let's be honest, a lot of horses don't like needles. You know, you, the everyday horse owner, can see that same point, decompress it with one piece of tape, and get the same response. So it's a phenomenal modality. And it's really exciting to be able to bring this to everyday people and allow them this affordable option that works so well. Like, we get hundreds and thousands of comments and videos and pictures sent to us. It's really astonishing.
And I think barrier to entry is probably some of it, because, and one of our listeners asked, Carol asked, what's the easiest way to learn to do it correctly? And I think that's what people are afraid of, right? Is how do I learn to do this correctly? You know, where do I put the tape, you know, to solve whatever issue I'm dealing with? I know that's, you're coming out with a book, right? That's going to help them with that.
Yeah. The book should be available for pre-sale, I think, in like the next 6 days. I've worked 5 years on this book. Don't ask why it took so long. I mean, it just is what it is. I know. It's like, okay, I'm going to be creative and I'm going to do this. And then, So anyways, 5 years later, but honestly, the best way, read the book. You're going to love the book. It's phenomenal. I make a lot of jokes. I'm a jokester at heart, but there's so many ways now. My YouTube channel has tons of videos. My Instagram is full of them. My Facebook is full of them. You know, my website, we produce videos that's on demand on an app. You can get it and buy it right now and be watching it in 15 seconds. So we really have reduced that barrier to entry. I think the biggest concern people have is, I don't want to do it wrong. I don't want to hurt my horse.
I get that too. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You can't do it wrong, y'all. Like, even if you do it wrong, you're just going to increase circulation to your horse, which is a good thing. Right. So if you do a support application wrong, you're just going to increase circulation, which is going to bring oxygen rich blood to the area, which is going to reduce inflammation. That's never going to hurt your horse. If you do relaxation application wrong, you may not get a full relaxation of the muscle or the Golgi tendon response. That's what's happening. But you will increase circulation to that muscle, which is going to make that muscle feel better. So that idea of it's only available for vets, chiropractors, body workers to do. No, you know, it was released that way in the beginning, which I feel like was just wrong to do to the public. And so I think that's why that barrier of entry is so forefront in people's minds, and they are questioning and concerning about it. Those certifications are for equine healthcare professionals that are going to be dealing with some pretty aggressive rehabilitation things, post-surgical stuff like that, where they need to know a whole lot. The everyday person, you really don't need to know all that, and you're not doing it professionally. So you don't have to worry about your liability insurance and all that stuff. You're touching your own horse. You're helping your own horse. I mean, you clean their feet out, right? You brush them, right? I mean, if they get a wound, you wrap their leg after the vet tells you to wrap it, right? If you're doing all that, you can do kinesiology taping with your eyes closed and one hand behind your back. My 12-year-old tapes horses.
Is there a specific discipline that you've seen have really adopted more than another?
Oh, no, it's across the board. Okay. We've got one of the biggest reining groups. I won't say their name because we're not an official sponsor of them. They refuse to compete without it. They call it their Nikes. We've been on polo teams, U.S. teams, other countries' Olympics teams, from, you know, eventers use it, dressage, hunters.
Is there any discipline that it's not allowed during competition?
Yes, FEI.
FEI?
You can't have it during competition for FEI, but you can have it in the barns. Some racing associations will not allow you to race with the tape on. Again, you can have it in the barns, while other racing associations will allow you to do that. And that's in large part by our practitioners who have gone over and over to the vets that preside over that particular association, shown them what the tape does, what it can and cannot do. And then they're like, oh, okay, yeah, you can use that in competition. As far as rodeo, pretty much all your Western disciplines, you can use it in competition until it's televised. Then you can't use it if it has a logo on it. But we recently removed our logo to make our tape better. So now you can use it during televised events. The only reason they wouldn't let you before is if we didn't sponsor
the televised event.
Exactly. Yeah.
So your Equitape, and the website, by the way, check it out, everybody. It's equa-tape.com. And there's a lot of good information on there. I mean, that website is loaded with information and videos, and it's just pages of information on this. I know my wife was looking through it. She does use it on herself and horses, and she's kind of figured it out on her own by just watching videos and, you know, consuming everything that's out there. So let's close on this. If you want to leave somebody with a single most important piece of advice you can give for somebody that wants to start using it, what would you tell them to do?
Okay. What would I tell them to do? Go to www.equitape.com and get the starter pack. It's a course. It's a kit. It's everything you're going to need. You can't screw up. Do the 4 applications in the video and record it while you do it, and then watch it back. And because you're not going to notice your horse licking and chewing and yawning and stretching and doing all those parasympathetic responses going, oh my God, this feels so good. You're going to notice that because you're going to be focused on taping. But if you record that and you watch it back, it will blow your mind. And if you have enough forefront thought to like take a video of your horse walking or trotting around before, and then you video him after, it'll blow your mind even further. It's so simple. Get started today, man. We're all here to help you guys. My team loves helping equestrians. We are all equestrians. We all have our own horses. We know how hard it is. We know how expensive it is. You know, they love to hurt themselves because they, know that we're paying the vet bills. So it's just a great way to get yourself started, save yourself a lot of money. And honestly, it's going to build a better bond between you and your horse.
Is it the same tape? I did have this listener question ask this. Is it the same tape you use for people and horses, or is there something different about the horse tape? Is it stickier or anything?
That is a great question. And yes, it is very much different. It has a different weight ratio. So the fabric itself is heavier, and that's to help mimic the horse's skin and fascia, makes them more receptive and it makes it work better. So that's one difference. It's a lot stretchier. So here, most people, the first thing they do wrong is they put an application off and it comes off within 24 hours and they're like, your tape doesn't work. It's designed to come off if you overstretch it. Because the tape is so much stretchier than human tape, you naturally just overstretch it. You don't realize you're doing it. So we tell everybody, however much stretch you think you're using, use 15 to 20% less when you're getting started, because it's super stretchy. And that's because of their very large bodies. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to work with them and not restrict their movement. And that's what kinesiology tape is designed to do, is move with your horse without restricting their movement. So that's different. We have a different adhesive, and our fabric makeup is different so that it breathes more. And why for this? Well, your horse lives outside, right? They're going to get wet. They're going to get sweaty. They're going to roll around the mud and the muck and do everything they possibly can to be as gross and dirty as possible. Especially if they're a white horse, right? So it's designed for your horse to live in and be breathable so that there doesn't develop like bacteria or fungus underneath it on the skin. So definitely if you're putting tape on a horse, make sure it is a tape meant for animals like ours is.
Equitape.com is where you can find all the information. Check it out there. If you have never tried it before or used it before, as I said, my wife Jennifer loves this, been using it for years on the horses and herself. So Rebecca, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You can enjoy your favorite equine videos all in one place with Ride TV, the ultimate equine streaming platform. The newly relaunched Ride TV has all the series you love, like Mini Horses and Ridiculous Ranches, plus top-tier training videos and event footage from Horse and Rider On Demand and BarrelRacing.com. Live the action, learn from the pros, love the stories. Subscribe to Ride TV today for only $19.99 to see where your ride takes you. Visit RideTVGo.tv to subscribe.
Time to learn why some days you're embarrassed to be part of the human race. In Jamie's Weird News.
It's that time of the week where I tell the weird news stories that you guys find for me by basically just looking through the news and seeing something and being like, oh, that's super weird. And then you email it to weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com because that is how I want to share in what's going on in your part of the world. And I would like to thank these people: Shelly, Jolynn, Stephanie, Laureen, Susan, Jenny, Michelle, and Carrie, all for submitting your interesting stories. And of course, it goes without saying that we're going to start in where? What place, Glenn?
Oklahoma.
No, we're going to go to Florida. Because dear sweet Edward Wells, he's 82 years old. And Edward. He lives in Florida. Edward, bless his heart. And he's 82. So every morning he sends a text message to his daughter, Stacy, that basically says, I'm still alive. Which is hilarious. Bless his heart. He lives in this house all by himself with his dog and texts his daughter every morning that I'm alive. And it was last Thursday and Stacy got a phone call from him. And she's like, oh, crap. Why is the phone ringing? She answers the phone. She's like, I'm on my way. So she runs over to his house. And it turns out that he had a visitor come into his house and it's all on camera and it's absolutely crazy. So he's sitting there. What he does is after he sends her a text message, he sits down in his chair and he plays like Sudoku on his iPad. That's what his day looks like. And he's sitting down in his living room and he says it sounded like they were getting bombed. There was like complete, utter house shaking, glass breaking insanity. Turns out a 300-pound boar crashed through his sliding glass door. At that moment, the boar saw the dog saw the boar, and they began to tussle. And it was crazy. The dog got hurt and he's like, and he runs out of the house and he's making phone calls. You got to get over here. They end up calling the police. The police come. They've got animal control officers on the scene. They start trying to catch the boar in his house for 45 minutes. They could not catch this boar.
I'm surprised they didn't just shoot it, because I mean, right? It's fair game on wild pigs here every day. You can shoot as many as you want.
I can't believe they didn't do anything, but apparently the officers were wearing body cameras, so everything is captured on footage. Yeah, and so
they're nasty too. Those pigs are nasty.
Yeah. I mean, I would wonder, like, is it rabid attacking the dogs crashing into the house? I don't know. Well, and guess what? We'll never know because it got away.
It got out
of the house and ran away. And so, yes, all this body camera footage of this boar. They even have the officers like watching another officer has like a rope, and the boar like charges him, and he tries to throw this rope.
They're nasty animals.
Dumbest thing ever.
They are nasty. Yeah. I mean, they'll hurt you.
I can't believe they didn't just plug him full of lead.
Yeah, like, I know. I can't. That would be the Florida way. I'm really shocked that it didn't happen that way, actually.
I know. Authorities have warned residents to, quote, keep your distance if you spot the boar as it remains.
He came through
the
window. Yeah. it's like keep your distance. He broke in. You know, in Florida, if it was a human that broke in, they would have shot him.
Okay, well, these poor people, whoever they are, the Canton Police Department was called out to a local, this is in Connecticut, public hiking trail because somebody left something behind on the hiking trail. And I mean, they probably are looking for it. And if they're not, we've got more questions, because as a gentleman was jogging on the local running trail in Canton, Connecticut, he looked down and in the middle of the trail was a giant, ornate, silver urn. An urn.
Lost grandpa?
Created remains were inside this urn. And so the guy's like, there's an urn. And so he calls the police and the police come out and they took custody of the item. And they're like, what do we do? So they tried to open it up and you can't open it. It's like metal shut.
Yeah.
It's a sealed urn. I don't know why the first thing you would do be like, we should open this to see. But probably what in my mind, I was like, you know what? Oh. Somebody's like, okay, we're going to take grandpa to his favorite spot off in the woods and like open the urn. And they get out there and they're like, it won't open. So they're like, let's just leave grandpa here. They did a whole big news push and social media search. And they finally identified the family of the deceased. And they are working with the family to ensure the urn is properly returned. You know, they were like, they meant to leave it out there.
Yeah.
Just leave it. It's now, just fine.
And they're getting a litter fine right now of $300.
Exactly.
Poor grandpa.
Now, Glenn, I saw that your wife posted some photos of your kitty cats. And tell everybody where your kitty cats were the other day.
So we have this screened-in porch and on the front of the house. And the kitty cats climbed up on top of the screened-in porch for some reason. I don't even know quite how they got up there. And they were just hanging out on top of the screened-in porch, surveying the neighborhood. I don't know. I was hoping they didn't destroy the screened-in porch. But
you often wonder if cats do that. They're like, this is so I can hunt better and murder the humans that are keeping me captive.
I think they just do it to piss us off, is really why.
I'm going to take you to France and tell you about Louise. I'm trying to think of the best way to start this story. I guess some passersby saw this cat on a roof and they're like, that's a problem. So police were called and police went to the home of the people that owned the cat. And they're like, it's our baby and she loves being on the roof. And so the police ended up like cordoning the area off and had to secure a perimeter and called the fire department. And they had this whole area cordoned off for a cat on a roof in France. What was the cat? A freaking 65-pound black panther. These idiots said that they bought them from a traveling family, which I'm assuming is like a gypsy family. They bought this baby panther from a gypsy family. I don't know if you can say gypsy anymore. I don't know. But anyway, gypsy family and in France, and they raised it and they live in this apartment.
Like everybody does, right?
Yeah. Their kitty wants on the roof. So they have this window and they open the roof and they let this big giant black panther. Could you imagine looking up, be like, oh my God, this is how I yes, die. I know.
The neighbor's house.
Well, they've both been arrested because you can't have a black panther in France on your roof of your apartment.
Or anywhere.
No, or anywhere. I mean, just don't do it. So they basically been arrested for species trafficking and saying that the physiological needs of the black panther could not be met in captivity.
In the apartment? Yeah, no kidding.
And the owner said, it's not a panther. She's a big, affectionate baby who just wants to be cuddled. Oh. That was their excuse. So they have been arrested. Now, I know you're going to be shocked, but the gentleman who had the Black Panther has already been arrested multiple times and convicted for other cases of theft, violence, drug dealing, and illegally keeping monkeys. So somebody put him in jail.
Most drug dealers just have pit bulls. He has a panther. He needed to one-up everybody else.
It is now living at a big cat sanctuary in the Netherlands where the caretaker said it is doing very well.
It has a little more room to roam than this guy's apartment in Paris.
Oh, last one. There's so many levels of somebody making a mistake. Although you could see initially that it would be an honest mistake, There's so many levels of stupidity that had to go into American TikToker Brittany DiZzolio has gone viral. She and her friend were, you know, they're TikTokers, they're social media, and they decided that they wanted to go to Nice, France. Okay. So they wanted to go to Nice, France. So they call the airline and they're like, hi, we'd like to buy a ticket to Nice. And the person was like, okay, cool, and booked them their ticket, and they sent them their ticket. I don't know how all of this happens. I'm giving the most simplistic explanation that I can. So they're going to Nice, France. So they get to the airport, and they had a connecting flight in Rome. They get to Rome, and they go to their next gate, and they get on the plane, and they're boarding a flight on Tunisia Air from Rome to Tunisia, which is also called Tunis. They thought they were going to France, and they boarded an airplane to Northern Africa. Oh my God. Yes. They said they got on the plane and they're like, is this flight going to Nice? And they were like, Tunis. Yeah. Tunis. Not Tunis.
How'd they get on the plane?
Nice. France. They bought the tickets to Tunis.
Ah, they bought the raw. Ah,
Tunis.
Okay. Got it. So they show up in Africa.
Like, they are on the plane and the doors are closed and they're asking around. They're like, where is this flight going? Tunis. No, but we want to go to Nice. And they bought tickets to Nice, to Tunis. So anyway, they're on this flight. The doors are closed. And they're like, we got to get out of here. We're going to Africa, which is not where they meant to go. And the flight attendants were like, sorry, you have to stay. And we'll just reconnect you when we get there. So they flew to Northern Africa by a communication error with the person who sold. I mean, I'm assuming English was probably not the first language of the person who sold them the tickets on. Who doesn't buy tickets online?
I know. Like, yeah, that's what I was wondering.
There's so many levels of stupid that has to go that you were like, obviously these people did this for like TikTok views.
You know what, though? If they were true TikTokers, they would have embraced that whole thing, went to Africa and made content.
Well, that's what they did. However, backfire. Oh. Every single person in the comments is like, you guys are the biggest idiots ever on the history of the earth. Because like, you wouldn't read the boarding gate. Yeah. You'd just like be like,
or your ticket.
Or your ticket. And it says Tunis instead of Nice.
It didn't say you had to be brilliant to be a TikToker. There's no rule about that.
I think that's the part of the problem is you just don't have to be that intelligent. They said after landing in Haverhill, having several different gyrations and panic conversations with flight attendants, they finally did make it to their desired destination.
3 days later.
So, yeah.
Well, how do people send you weird news?
Weird news at horse rate. Is it weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com?
Yes,
I just had
is.
A brain fart.
Yes, it is.
Weird I'm news watching this TikTok of these idiots are like, oh my God. Apparently, they did make a really big, embarrassing stink on the plane. And of course, they're like American white girl. Like, oh, y'all are giving us the worst bad name. But I did find out that this has happened before because fellow TikTok besties Lynn and Kira thought that they booked a flight to San Jose, Costa Rica, and they landed in San Jose, California. So it's not the first time this has ever happened.
All right, I have some nice news to end today. You want it?
Oh, thank God.
Okay, so there's this guy. His name is Russell McKeehan. And he 30 years ago was in an ambulance accident, which left him paralyzed. A number of years after that, he actually, in 2007, he had surgery that helped him out. He had some movement after that. Then he had another accident that paralyzed him again. Oh. So this is now fast forward to today when he met a neurosurgeon by the name of Dr. Scott Fauci. And Dr. Scott said, I think there's this new surgery that will help you. Because his daughter's getting married in September coming up, and he wanted to be able to walk her down the aisle. So Dr. Fauci did the surgery. He has regained some movement, apparently, in his arms and legs, and they think he'll be able to walk his daughter down the aisle after 30 years. Isn't that a good story? So, so good for them, and I hope he gets to do that, and that's something that that entire family will remember forever. So there's your good news story to end the day. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We really appreciate it. Tomorrow we have the NRHA, and then Friday we have more really bad ads. Send your ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Got the new prize for this month as well. And we're not doing a post show today because we have an appointment that we both, Jamie and I have an appointment we have to attend in shortly. So we need
He's
to do that.
Me work more, y'all.
It is work involved, that's for sure. But we'll see y'all on Friday.
Spay, neuter, and geld. Glenn, get your cats off the roof.